Thanks for listening to this message from the life of St. Bees. We're a church that loves to empower, equip and inspire. And in order to better fulfill this call, we're currently undertaking an audacious church relocation project. Find out more, including how you can take part, at www.goandgrow.london. Thank you, and may this message better help you to live a life full of adventurous faith.
Well, as this is the first Sunday of 2016, I get to do two things. First of all, to do what others have done from this platform, which is to wish you all a very happy new year. Can't let the moment go without doing that, so happy new year to you. And secondly, I get to introduce a brand new sermon series. Now, if you've looked at that program that Henry mentioned a moment ago, or if you've looked at today's bulletin, you'll see that there is a new sermon series entitled From Here to There. That's the title of the series. Let's get up on the screen, shall we, so we can see that. There it is, From Here to There. And it's that sort of title where you think, I know what that's going to be about. Oh, no, you don't, do you? Because you think, what on earth is it going to be about? It's more that sort of a title, isn't it? What's that going to be about? So let me tell you what it's going to be about. We're going to be spending this term looking into the Old Testament. In fact, we're going right back to the very beginning of the Old Testament. And we're going to have a series that will start off in the book of Exodus, and then we'll later draw from the books of Numbers, Deuteronomy, and Joshua. So we're looking at the period of history that is covered by those books. Let me tell you a bit about the story as it begins and a little bit of how they got there. The story begins in the book of Exodus with the people of Israel being slaves in Egypt. The story of how they got to be in Egypt is found in Genesis. You remember some of the stories about Joseph, for example, how Joseph was sold by his brothers and ended up in Egypt and rose to a position of great prominence. And then there was a famine in Canaan where the rest of his family were. And through the providence of God, it worked out that Jacob, who was Joseph's father, and the whole family, about 70 of them, were able to relocate from Canaan into Egypt where there was food. And so they moved simply to be where the provision of food was. But time goes by. In fact, 400 years or so have gone by. And now Joseph, who had once been in a position of great prominence in Egypt, is completely forgotten. And the people of Israel have become slaves. And not just slaves, but slaves who were very harshly and cruelly oppressed as slaves in Egypt. Into that setting, Moses is born. And when Moses has grown up, God appears to him in the incident of the burning bush. And God says this. God says, I have seen the misery of my people in Egypt. I have heard their crying out because of their slave drivers, and I am concerned about their suffering. So I have come down to rescue them from the hand of the Egyptians and to bring them up out of that land into a good and spacious land, a land flowing with milk and honey. So God's promise to his people in slavery in Egypt is, I'm going to bring you out of this. I'm going to take you out of the suffering of Egypt. I'm going to take you away from that. And I'm going to bring you into a good and a spacious land. And I'm going to take you there. Or in its simplest, God is saying, I'm going to take you from here to there. From Egypt, where you've been in slavery, to there, to the promised land, which I'm going to give you. And that's what we're going to be looking at in this series, the journey that they took when they left Egypt and before they arrived in the promised land. And so the story that we're going to look at begins in Exodus with the people being delivered from slavery in Egypt and crossing the Red Sea. And that's the event that we'll look at in a few moments' time in a little bit more detail this morning. So the story begins with them coming out of Egypt and going through the waters of the Red Sea. And then the story ends in Joshua, and we'll get to this at the end of the term, the story ends with them going through the River Jordan and into the promised land. And so we have these two sort of bookends of coming out of Egypt and through the sea, and then ending going through the river and into the land. But most of the journey in between those two times, in between going through the Red Sea and then going through the Jordan, most of that journey took place in the desert, in the wilderness. And so let's complete the slide by putting up a picture taken from Mount Sinai of the desert. And you get the sense of the distance. And there in the distance, the sun is setting over the promised land. That's where God is taking them to. But most of the time of the journey, they are in the desert. That's the period we're going to look at. And before we get into look at it in a little bit more detail, it's probably worth asking the question, well, why? Why would we want to look at that period of Israel's history? When you think about it, most scholars would say that the Exodus took place in about 1446 BC. So these were events that happened about 3,500 years ago. How can history from 3,500 years ago have anything to say to us in 2016 that could possibly be relevant? Well, I think it does, and I think it does at two levels. The first level is this, that there is quite a tradition in Christian thinking of seeing this period of Israel's history as representing the Christian life now. Because it begins with the people being saved out of Egypt. And as soon as they've been saved out of Egypt, they pass through water. And so people have seen that as sort of an image of the beginning of the Christian life, where you are saved and then pass through the water of baptism. So the link between salvation and baptism, people have often seen the beginning of this journey as representing the beginning of the Christian life. And equally, people have often seen the end of the journey, passing through the Jordan and into the promised land, as representing the end of our life. In fact, if you've ever sung the hymn, "Guide Me, O Thou Great Jehovah," who's ever sung that? You must have sung that, yeah? Then you have sung about that, haven't you? Someone at the front shaking their head. Get your parents to teach it to you, Rosie. It's a really good hymn. I'm sorry that they've neglected your education and not taught you this part of your heritage, but we'll do it for you now. There's this wonderful verse in the hymn that goes like this: "When I tread the verge of Jordan, bid my anxious fears subside, death of death and hell's destruction, land me safe on Canaan's side." And so this image of passing through the Jordan into the promised land is seen as an image of what it's like for the Christian to die. It's that we pass through into the presence of God. And so this whole period has been seen as representing Christian life. And the Apostle Paul, when he wrote to the church in Corinth, picked up on that, and he talked about this very period of Israel's history. And he specifically mentions the Red Sea and passing through it. And he says, "These things happened to them as examples and were written down as warnings for us on whom the culmination of the ages has come." And so that's why this is an important period for us to look at, because the Bible tells us that in this passage, we will find examples and warnings. We'll find examples of good and godly behavior that we can follow. We'll also find warnings about some not so good and some ungodly behavior that we should avoid. So there's that sense of the big picture of our lives. This passage or this period of time is relevant to us. But I think there's also a sense in which it's particularly relevant for us as a church here, St. Barnabas 2016, because this period of time in Israel's history was a time where they knew that they had left something behind, and they knew that there was something that was ahead of them, but they weren't there yet. They were on a journey towards something that God had promised to give them, but they weren't there. There was a journey that they had to go on. And I guess that for us at the moment here in St. Bees, it does feel a little bit like that, doesn't it? We spent a lot of time last year talking about and raising money for our Go and Grow project to relocate up onto the high road. We have this real sense of a vision of what God has said to us about where he wants us to be, where he wants us to go. We know that it's there. And oh, how we wish we could just click our fingers and be there now. But it's not going to be quite like that. There's a period of time, and it may take some time. It may take quite some time. Even though we know that's where we're going, it may take some time for us to actually get there. And so we've got this period of time stretching ahead of us where we're going from here to there. We know where God's taking us, but we're not there yet. And so it's possible, and I think it is in the wisdom of God, that there are lessons that we can learn from the people of Israel in this period of their history that can be instructive for us and helpful for us as we're also in this period of moving from here to there, but we're not there yet. So that's why we're looking at the passage. So let's come back to the passage itself and think about the incident we're going to think about today. We know from the book of Exodus that even after God had given them the promise that he would rescue them and bring them into a good and spacious land, it didn't just happen right away. The king of Egypt, Pharaoh, was unwilling to let the people go. And so God sent a series of plagues on Egypt. That came to a climax with the death of every firstborn child, except for the children of Israel. And then Pharaoh was keen for them to go and basically commanded them to go. And that's where our sermon series really begins, and that's where today we're picking up the story. We're going to begin with a Bible reading that is quite a long Bible reading, which contains one of the most well-known stories of the Old Testament, the story of Moses leading the people of Israel through the Red Sea. It's a lengthy passage. You'll find it on page 68 of the Church Bible. If you haven't got one, please raise a hand and someone will bring one to you. And Natalie has kindly agreed to read this very lengthy passage for us. So thank you, Natalie, for being willing to do that. Exodus chapter 13, verse 17, page 68.
When Pharaoh let the people go, God did not lead them on the road through the Philistine country, though that was shorter. For God said, if they face war, they might change their minds and return to Egypt. So God led the people around the desert road through the Red Sea. The Israelites went up out of Egypt ready for battle. Moses took the bones of Joseph with him because Joseph had made the Israelites swear an oath. He had said, God will surely come to your aid, and then you must carry my bones up with you from this place. After leaving Sukkot, they camped at Etham on the edge of the desert. By day, the Lord was ahead of them in a pillar of clouds to guide them on their way, and by night in a pillar of fire to give them light, so that they could travel by day or night. Neither the pillar of cloud by day nor the pillar of fire by night left its place in front of the people. Then the Lord said to Moses, tell the Israelites to turn back and camp near Pi Hahiroth, between Migdol and the sea. They are to camp by the sea directly opposite Baal Zephon. Pharaoh will think the Israelites are wandering around the land in confusion, hemmed in by the desert, and I will harden Pharaoh's heart and he will pursue them. But I will gain glory for myself through Pharaoh and all his army, and the Egyptians will know that I am the Lord. So the Israelites did this. When the king of Egypt was told that the people had fled, Pharaoh had his officials change their minds about them and said, what have we done? We have let the Israelites go and they have lost their services. So he had his chariots made ready and took his army with him. He took 600 of the best chariots, along with all the other chariots of Egypt, with officers over all of them. And the Lord hardened the heart of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, so that he pursued the Israelites, who were marching out boldly. The Egyptians, all Pharaoh's horses and chariots, horsemen and troops, pursued the Israelites and overtook them where they were camped by the sea near Pi-Hahiroth, opposite Baal Zephon. As Pharaoh approached, the Israelites looked up, and there were the Egyptians marching after them. They were terrified and cried out to the Lord. They said to Moses, was it because there were no graves in Egypt that you brought us to the desert to die? What have you done to us by bringing us out of Egypt? Didn't we say to you in Egypt, leave us alone, let us serve the Egyptians? It would be better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the desert. Moses answered the people, do not be afraid. Stand firm and you will see the deliverance of the Lord will bring you today. The Egyptians you see today, you will never see again. The Lord will fight for you. You need only to be still. Then the Lord said to Moses, "Why are you crying out to me? Tell the Israelites to move on. Raise your staff, stretch out your hand over the sea to divide the water so the Israelites can go through the sea on dry ground. I will harden the hearts of the Egyptians so they will go in after them. And I will gain glory through Pharaoh and all his army, or through his chariots and his horsemen. The Egyptians will know that I am the Lord when I gain glory through Pharaoh, his chariots and his horsemen." Then the angel of God, who had been traveling in front of the Israel's army, withdrew and went behind them. The pillar of cloud also moved from in front and stood behind them, coming between the armies of Egypt and Israel. Throughout the night, the cloud brought darkness to the one side of the light to the other, so that neither went near the other all night long. Then Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and all that night the Lord drove the sea back with a strong east wind and turned it into dry land. The waters were divided, and the Israelites went through the sea on dry ground, with a wall of water on their right and on their left. The Egyptians pursued them, and all Pharaoh's horses and chariots and horsemen followed them into the sea. During the last watch of the night, the Lord looked down from the pillar of fire and cloud at the Egyptian army and threw it into confusion. He jammed the wheels of the chariots so they had difficulty driving, and the Egyptians said, "Let us get away from the Israelites. The Lord is fighting for them against Egypt." Then the Lord said to Moses, "Stretch out your hand over the sea so the waters may flow back over the Egyptians and their chariots and horsemen." Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and at daybreak the sea went back into its place. The Egyptians were fleeing towards it, and the Lord swept them into the sea. The water flowed back and covered the chariots and horsemen, the entire army of Pharaoh that had followed the Israelites into the sea. Not one of them survived. But the Israelites went through the sea on dry ground with a wall of water on their right and on their left. That day the Lord saved Israel from the hands of the Egyptians, and Israel saw the Egyptians lying dead on the shore. And when the Israelites saw the great power the Lord displayed against the Egyptians, the people feared the Lord and put their trust in him and in Moses, his servant.
Thank you, Natalie. You deserve a long service medal for that. Because with a reading like that, it's bound to be a long service. There we go. Really is one of the most exciting stories of the Old Testament, isn't it? It's a story that has been the subject of films, songs, prophecies. If you think of films, you can choose whether you want to think of Moses as being like Charlton Heston in the old film, The Ten Commandments, and see him there parting the waters, or whether you prefer the more modern representation of Christian Bale in the film Exodus, Gods and Kings. If you think about songs, you have everything from the sublime to the ridiculous about the crossing of the Red Sea. From the sublime, where you just have to turn to the very next chapter, where in Exodus chapter 15, you have the song of Moses and Miriam, where they sing to the Lord because he's highly exalted and he's saved his people. And when you get into the Psalms, there are Psalms that were written about this event. Psalm 78, God divided the sea and led them through. He made the water stand up like a wall. Psalm 106, he rebuked the Red Sea and it dried up. He led them through the depths as through a desert. So we have these sublime songs in Exodus and Psalms. And from the sublime to the ridiculous, I remember singing a song in Sunday school, which I guess some of you also sang and would probably quote the lines. It contains those classic lines, "God blew with his wind, puff, 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 puff. He blew just enough, nuff, 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 nuff." Classic, isn't it? If you want to hear it, search on YouTube for "How Did Moses Cross the Red Sea?" and you can listen to it later. I highly recommend it. And it was also such a key part of Jewish history that the prophets referred back to it. Isaiah, when he was speaking about God, spoke of him as "he who made a way through the sea, a path through the mighty waters." This is such a key event. It's the subject of film, of song, of prophecy. It's such a key event in Israel's history. And let me just stop for a moment and underline the fact that I'm talking about a key event in Israel's history. We are talking here, I believe, about an actual historical event. This is not a key part of Jewish mythology or a key part of Jewish legend. It's a part of Jewish history. I believe that this passage records an actual historical event, that there was a time in Jewish history when God enabled his people to cross through the Red Sea on dry ground. That's the point that the passage makes twice. The phrase is used in Exodus 14, 21, 22. The waters were divided and the Israelites went through the sea on dry ground. And the same again in Exodus 14, 29. It was on dry ground. I believe this is a historical event that happened that is recorded here in Exodus. And we've heard it, the story. But from the passage, the one verse that I want us to focus on is the very last verse of that reading. And it's this: when the Israelites saw the great power the Lord displayed against the Egyptians, the people feared the Lord and put their trust in him and in Moses, his servant. This amazing event that we've just heard read to us is God showing his great power. This was God saying to his people, showing them that he is a powerful God. He is a God who is able to do amazing things. He is a God of great power. God displays his great power. And when that happens, three things happen in response. Firstly, we read the people of Israel, then they feared the Lord. Let's just stay with that thought for a moment, because that phrase, they feared the Lord, or the phrase, the fear of the Lord, it's not actually one that we use very often. But it's a phrase that recurs in Scripture in both the Old and the New Testaments, this sense of the fear of the Lord. Now, I don't think it's about being afraid of God so that we cower from him in fear. I don't think it's that kind of fear. Rather, it is about viewing God with reverence and with awe. That's what the writer to the Hebrews tells us in Hebrews 12. It says, therefore, since we are receiving a kingdom that cannot be shaken, let us be thankful and so worship God acceptably with reverence and awe, for our God is a consuming fire. This picture of God, as he is presented here in Hebrews, and as the children of Israel saw him when he had parted the waters and led them through, caused them to worship him with reverence and awe. Now here at St. Bees, we talk a lot about intimate worship. If you've read our publicity, our publications, whether it's the little mission card with our mission aims or our bigger publicity, you'll find one of our stated mission aims is encountering God in intimacy and passion. And we often speak about intimacy. We speak about the Father heart of God, about knowing God as Father. And these are really high values for us, that we want people to have an experience of God and an encounter with God where they know him as Father. But what this passage this morning is teaching us is that this God who is our Heavenly Father, with whom we can have an intimate relationship, is also a holy God, a consuming fire, whom we worship with reverence and awe. And I believe it shows us that reverence and awe and intimacy are not opposites, they go together. And I think for me, the person who probably captured this for me in the most helpful way is C.S. Lewis, in the way he portrays Aslan. You remember Aslan, the lion who is the Christ figure in the Chronicles of Narnia. In the first book, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, there's a conversation recorded where the four children in the story are first being told about Aslan by Mr. and Mrs. Beaver. Let me read it to you. And because I'm so used to reading this to the grandchildren, Mr. and Mrs. Beaver come from the West Country when I read the story. I mean, it's got to be done, doesn't it? So, Mr. Beaver, don't you know who is the king of beasts? Aslan is a lion. The lion. the great lion. Ooh, said Susan. I thought he was a man. Is he quite safe? I shall feel rather nervous about meeting a lion. That you will, dearie, and no mistake, said Mrs. Beaver. If there's anyone who can appear before Aslan without their knees knocking, or they're either braver than most or else just silly. Then he isn't safe, said Lucy. Safe, said Mr. Beaver. Don't you hear what Mrs. Beaver tells you? Who said anything about being safe? Of course he isn't safe, but he's good. He's the king, I tell you. I'm longing to see him, said Peter, even if I do feel frightened when it comes to the point. And then a little bit later in the book, Mr. Beaver also says he's wild, you know, not like a tame lion. And so we have this picture presented of Aslan. He's not safe. He's not tame. He's wild, but he's good. And in the books, one of the children, Lucy, has a particular relationship with Aslan. And there's a scene in one of the later books, Prince Caspian, which I think really captures this sense of the awesomeness of God and yet the intimacy that we can have with him in an encounter between Lucy and Aslan. And I thought you'd like to see it. So let's watch the clip. I think that's brilliant, isn't it? Doesn't that just capture that sense of, that's a God you don't want to mess with. He's not a safe God. He's not a tame God. He's a God who fights on behalf of his people, who does powerful things. But he's a God that we can run to and wrap our arms around and feel his arms wrapped around us. I think that's a brilliant picture of this sense of a God who is an awesome God, who is our Father. And we love him and we're intimate with him as Father, but we never forget that he's the God who can part the waters of the Red Sea. He's a powerful God. We worship him with reverence and awe in intimate worship. The second thing that happens was they put their trust in this God. Now, to be honest, you'd have thought that enough had already happened before this for them to trust God. God had spared them during the plagues. God had changed Pharaoh's mind so that he'd let them go. But it does seem that they were rather slow to trust him. But when they saw what he did at the Red Sea, then they trusted him. When they came through the water, they trusted God. And just picking up on that, seeing this as an image of the Christian life and the beginning of the Christian life, the church that I was brought up in practiced believers' baptism. And the tradition in the particular local church that I was brought up in was that when a person had been baptized, as they came up out of the water, we always sang the same song. Every baptism service, year in and year out, as long as I was in the church, they only ever sang the same song after each baptism, which was the chorus from the hymn, Trust and Obey. For there's no other way to be happy in Jesus but to trust and obey. And there was a sense that as you came out of the water, the first word you heard was, trust and obey. And as Israel came up out of the water of the Red Sea, they trusted God. There was something about what had happened that caused them to trust God, because they would need that for the rest of the journey. They would need that for the rest of their time during the wilderness. They would need to trust God for their provision of food on a daily basis. They would need to trust God to provide water when they were in a barren desert. They would need to trust God for protection from their enemies. And in particular, they would need to trust God to lead and guide and direct them. As we saw in our reading, Exodus 13, by day the Lord went ahead of them in a pillar of cloud to guide them on their way, and by night in a pillar of fire to give them light so they could travel by day or night. They had to learn to trust God to lead them and to guide them through unknown territory. A few weeks ago in our evening service, we had Pete Hughes from King's Cross Church come and preach, and he was talking about the journey that they've gone on as a church and how this particular portion of Israel's history they felt was relevant to them. And in one particular way, he said that they felt that what God had said to them as a church was the same as had happened for the people of Israel. God would said, I'm not giving you a map, but I will be your guide. And there's something different, isn't there, between having a map and having a guide. Some of us are better at reading maps than others. The thing about a map is you can try and work out where you are, and you can try and work out where you want to get to, and you can try and work out a route between the two, and you may get it right and you may get it wrong, because a map is quite impersonal and it very much depends on your ability to read the map. But with a guide, you just have to trust them. It's as simple as that. If the guide says, we're going here, you just have to trust them. And God says to his people in the wilderness, I'll be your guide. Not a map, but a guide. I think that's a key lesson for us, isn't it? That God, throughout all our lives, and especially for us in this season of our life as a church, where we're going from here to there, we know where God's taking us. But the route to get there is still one that we have to travel, to learn to trust God. We're entering unknown territory. We've never been this way before. We need to grow in this area of trusting God to lead and to guide. But there was a third thing. Firstly, they feared the Lord, and then they put their trust in him. But then, thirdly, they put their trust in Moses, his servant. At first glance, that might seem quite a strange third thing to add to the list, because, after all, it was God who'd performed the miracle. It was God who parted the waters. But this caused them to trust God and Moses. And as we go through the passage, as we read it, we see actually God uses Moses as part of what he's doing. Moses is part of God's plan. Let's see, what did it look like? Well, we saw God spoke to Moses, and God gave Moses clear and specific directions to pass on to the people. Exodus 14, verse 1, the Lord said to Moses, tell the Israelites to turn back and encamp near Pi-Hahiroth between Migdol and the sea. They're to encamp by the sea directly opposite Baal Zephon. Quite specific instructions that God gives his people through Moses. God says to Moses, tell them this. Moses passes on the directions that God has given. And then when they're having their wobbles and they're saying, wouldn't it be better if we just stayed in Egypt and died? Moses encourages the people, not by pointing them to himself as their leader, but by pointing them to God. And Moses, we read in verse 13, Moses answered the people, don't be afraid, stand firm and you will see the deliverance the Lord will bring you today. The Egyptians you see today, you will never see again. The Lord will fight for you. You need only to be still. So when they were wobbling, he pointed them to God. And then we see that Moses modeled personal obedience and was thoroughly involved in what God was doing. When God said, the Lord said to Moses, raise your staff and stretch out your hand over the sea to divide the water so the Israelites can go through the sea on dry ground. Then a couple of verses later we read, Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and all that night the Lord drove the sea back. So Moses is actually a great example of a leader who hears the voice of God and brings God's direction to the people. A leader who encourages the people to look to God and what he will do. And a leader who personally obeys and is involved in what God is doing. And when the people of God are led by leaders like that, then it's a good thing for the people of God to learn not just to trust God, but to trust the leaders that God has given them. Because that's what happened with the Israelites. They trusted God, and they trusted the leader that God had given them. Now, they didn't always get this bit right. We've got to be real. They had a bit of a record for complaining. I'm sure some of you will have seen this cartoon before, when Moses parts the water. What do you mean it's a bit muddy? You know, they were never totally satisfied with what God did. But here, at the end of the story, they set the good example. They trust in God and in Moses, his servant. Now let me speak quite frankly. I'm in a very privileged position here at St. Barnabas Church. I think I'm a very privileged position because I hold a position of leadership, so I am a leader in the church. And yet at the same time, I'm not the senior leader of the church. Henry has that job. And I'm very happy that Henry has that job. I regularly tell Henry I do not want his job. I'm very happy that Henry has the job of the senior leader. So I can speak both as a leader in this church, as someone who is one of the leadership, but also I can speak as someone who is led, that there are others that I follow as those who lead me. And so I want to speak in both capacities. So first of all, let me speak as a leader and just say to you as a church, what a privilege it is to be part of a church like St. Bees, where people like you trust us as leaders and follow the lead that we give. Now, just in case there are any visitors present, let me reassure you, this is not a mild bunch of people who just go, yes, sir, no, sir, three bags full, sir, whenever the leadership speak. This is a bunch of people who will challenge, question, robustly challenge and robustly question at times and say, are you sure you've got that right? And yet, when we come to that place of saying, we've sought God, we've listened to the people, but now this is what we sense God is saying, and this is where we're going. You as a people, trust us and follow. And that is an amazing privilege for us to lead a bunch of people who will do that. And so as a leader in the church, I just simply this morning, first of all, just want to say thank you. Thank you for being, as the people of God here, people who are willing to trust us as your leaders and follow where we lead. Now, to think about it, this Go and Grow project, it's not the sort of thing that is a nice, comfortable little thing to invite a church to get involved in, is it? I mean, it's a big thing that we came to you and asked you to be involved in. And yet both in 2014 and 2015, you rose to that challenge and you said, right, here's our money. We'll follow you. We trust you. And that is such a privilege to be part of a leadership team in a church where the people trust the leaders. And I just want to acknowledge that and say to you, thank you for following us and trusting the lead that we bring. But now I want to switch, and now I want to speak as someone who is led. And I particularly this morning, I want to speak to Henry. He heard this at 9:30, so he knows he's about to be embarrassed because he heard it at 9:30. But I just felt I wanted to say something specifically to Henry and say to Henry publicly that, Henry, you, as our senior leader here, I believe that you personally do all three of these things that Moses does in this passage as our leader. You hear the voice of God, and you bring God's direction to us as the people of God. And you encourage us to look to God and what he will do. You don't encourage us to look to you. You encourage us to look to God and what he will do. And you personally obey and get involved in what God is doing. You lead us by your example of being in there doing it. And so, Henry, I want to say to you, I trust you. I trust God, and I trust you as the senior leader of this church. And I think I probably speak for more than myself in saying that. Yeah? Let's draw it back together. If the band want to make their way back up onto the stage, that would be really helpful. When God saved his people out of Egypt, the beginning of their journey from here to there, he began it with this amazing display of power where he made it possible for them to pass through the Red Sea on dry ground. And God has saved us with an amazing display of his power by making us alive with Christ even when we were dead in our sins. He has saved us. He has brought us out of the equivalent of that Egypt where we were slaves, and he has set us free. Not only that, but in recent days has done amazing things for us as we followed his leading towards where we believe God is leading us in this Go and Grow project. We've seen God's hand upon it in amazing ways where things have happened again and again that have left us saying it can only be God. God has done amazing things for us. So this morning, I just want to encourage us to have the same response to the display of God's power that the people of Israel had, in reverse order. Let's continue to trust the leaders that God has called to serve him by leading us at this time. Let's trust God to lead and guide us through the whole of our life and in this next season of the church's life. Let's look to God as our guide, thankful that we have a guide and not a map. Because if we had a map, we'd constantly be arguing about, no, that's north, no, that's north, no, we should go there. No, we've got a guide. So let's trust our guide. But let's also follow the example of the people of Israel and fear the Lord. They feared the Lord. We enjoy an intimate relationship with God. Let's never lose that sense of intimacy with God. But let's constantly remember that we have an intimate relationship with a holy God, whom we worship with reverence and awe.